Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about PlayStation cards, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and The Division 2. There are a bunch of things to discuss, and to do that, we have our games editor, that is Rishi Alwani.
Hey.
Friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani is also here.
Yes.
And I'm your host, Pranay Parab. So first things first, PlayStation cards. Apparently, you know, there's been some information that we'd been sitting on for a couple of months.
I mean, it's something a bunch of retailers had hinted at for like, I think, a couple of months now, which is that PlayStation cards would be coming to India. Now, for those of you who are unaware, PlayStation cards are essentially a few varieties. There's the prepaid PlayStation gift cards, which are in denominations of 500 rupees to 4,500 rupees, which lets you reload your PlayStation wallet on the PlayStation store, so you can buy digital items, DLC, games, and the like. And then there are specific cards which you can buy that have codes for the DLC itself, like FIFA Ultimate Team points or Fortnite V-Bucks. And then there's the third, which is a code you can buy for the full game. Like again, for something like Spider-Man, if you want the full game as a digital code, you can buy the card at retail. And you can also buy PS Plus subscriptions. Now, PS Plus subscriptions have been available at retail for a while, but the other three have not. Codes, games, and credit have not.
And now, even DLC.
Yeah, sorry. DLC, games, and credit have not. Now, why this matters is if you've been using the PlayStation Store and the PlayStation Network since its inception or before, you'd have to deal with faulty payment gateways. The situation is so severe that the only way to get it working is you have to email Sony's customer support with your email address and your PSN ID for them to whitelist the card linked to your account. And even then, it may not work. So for you to add money on your PlayStation wallet, for you to buy games digitally, was next to impossible using a working debit or credit card. The same debit or credit card would work fine on Amazon.com, would work fine on every website in the known universe, but it would not work on the PlayStation India store, which is why this is a big deal. People can finally buy digital through physical means.
Yeah, so how to buy PlayStation games without credit card, cash?
So basically, so before that, another reason why this is a very huge deal is there are still a lot of people in India who don't want to put their card on PSN because of what happened a while ago where PSN got hacked.
Yeah, it wasn't a while ago. It was like 6-7 years back. It's really tough for some people to even to look past that, and you can't blame them because for most part, I mean, while Sony has been the number one console, it's easy to get the impression that the back end is run by a hamster on a wheel. And, you know, that's the feeling you get because some parts of it aren't as polished as they could be, don't work as they should be.
Yeah.
So the thing is, also, when you buy games in India on PlayStation, you need to buy DLC from the same region. And if you don't have your credit card on file on PSN, you basically were locked out of the DLC. The situation did improve because a lot of publishers started bringing in gold editions of games which came with a code with the DLC included. Or like even Destiny got like Destiny the Collection, which came out over a year ago, which had all the DLC available. But yeah, the problem was still that if you bought Horizon Zero Dawn, you couldn't buy the DLC unless you waited for the complete edition or your credit card or debit card. I don't even know if debit cards work on India PSN. I've never tried.
They used to work many moons ago.
Like 90% of the time your card will not work. So now that's exactly what's available now. You can pick up Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wilds, as a digital download game add-on card from Games the Shop. As of now, it's only at Games the Shop.
No. So what's happening is that it's coming to... All of this will be available across retail. But how Sony India has done it is a little different. So the physical distribution of these cards, as in the actual physical card itself, which has the codes, are going to be distributed by Sony India. While the digital variants of these cards, which is basically printed codes on a piece of paper, are being done by EXPRESS, who also distribute half of the other games in the country from 2K, Square Enix, Ubisoft, etc. So that's how it's structured. What this basically means is whether you're shopping from Amazon, Flipkart, or your local store, you'll be able to buy PS Store credit. Now, another reason why most people should care about this is because the PlayStation 4 is, I mean, the biggest selling console in India. We're probably sitting on 300,000 units of the console sold. And this just makes it easier for people to buy digital purchases. In the past, Sony has told us on record that from those who are able to make transactions on the PlayStation Store, there's a good uptake in terms of DLC. So for them, this is a good way to push the market forward.
And another thing to note is Rishi mentioned the FIFA Ultimate Team points. That's even bigger, even a bigger deal, I'd say, because FIFA is super popular in India. I'd say FIFA, one Sony game per year, GTA are probably, and Call of Duty are like the top selling games each year in India.
Yeah, pretty much. Though, funnily enough, most of the FIFA sales in India haven't been official product. So now, because you have FUT points available officially,
which only work on... So the thing with FUT points is they are treated as services, not DLC. So basically, you can't account share like you could with Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wilds, or likely will be able to with the Spider-Man, the City That Doesn't Sleep, or Endless Sleep, whatever it is, DLC. So because of this, you'd need to buy a FIFA copy meant for India, and you'd need to buy the FUT points, which will only be usable on your account. Earlier, you wouldn't be able to do this at all because you need to make purchases through PSN for it. So now retailers can actually give you, offer you FUT points when you buy FIFA from them. Although FIFA is still quote unquote exclusive to Amazon India, so it remains to be seen how that works out. But at least now, going by Games the Shop, they have a listing for the FIFA 19 Ultimate Edition for 5499 rupees, which you could buy that and buy FUT points if that's the only game you buy each year and stuff like that. It's a very big deal because, yeah, you can start buying DLC now offline. You don't need to put your card on file. You can just buy that. You can buy a PSN card. You can buy PS Plus and just use your console. You can get everything in one go as it is. And I'm sure that's going to happen slowly through unofficial bundles and the like, because obviously you can't bundle these things officially. But a lot of retailers, at least in Asia and in other countries, usually bundle PS Plus, PSN credit, and a few games. Now they'll be able to do it with digital codes as well.
And here's another thing for those of you who are looking for the best deals possible. From what we've been given to understand, the physical cards have a 12-month expiry period after the 12 months expire. So we won't be surprised to see that when you're down 9 months in, if someone hasn't sold out, they'll probably be willing to let it go at a loss or a discount just to offload it. So that's something to keep an eye out as well.
Yeah, so while I am really happy to see that, you know, now PlayStation cards are available in India, I am kind of sad that it wasn't available at this time last year, because they would have made a killing thanks to demonetization and people looking to encash their old banknotes.
Well, that's a funny way of looking at it, because from what I know, from what we know, and in fact, if we consider demonetization situation was actually, I think, 2017? Yeah, 2017?
Yeah, this time last year.
You're right, this time last year. No, a year prior. A year prior.
Was it? Okay,
yes,
a year prior. So maybe two years ago.
Yeah,
then.
So 2 years ago. So what is interesting was, and this was around the same time as the Watch Dogs 2 Midnight launch. And, you know, the stores that were doing it were afraid that people wouldn't show up. But they did, and they paid in cash.
Hmm.
And those who couldn't pay in cash showed up and paid on card. There was no issue that way. They even ran some offers with wallets. But then, I mean, the wallet purchase was barely like 8 to 10% of the entire sale. Most of it was being paid on cash or card. So it didn't make the demonetized. It's interesting you bring that up, because as far as we know, the only game that actually needed that push from demonetization was actually Call of Duty, and that Infinite Warfare, and that too not in the way you'd expect, because it was a situation where there's excess stock, so several people in the supply chain were taking old notes in return for copies of the game at a massive discount, yada yada yada. It was a messy scene. But in general, most gaming purchases do happen through electronic means, at least those we are aware of. However, that being said, there is a large chunk of people who still use Steam's cash on delivery option, and that actually has worked to get to allow for a greater prevalence of gaming within markets that you never thought would bother with. I mean, one of the comments we got from readers around along when this was announced, when PlayStation prepaid cards was announced officially, one of the comments we got from readers was basically, you can't tell how much I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for this for a really long time, because in my city, it's really tough to get games. The only thing they need to do now to make this better is figure out a cash on delivery option.
Hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, it's a big deal.
But wouldn't people like Games the Shop do that?
So that's a funny thing. That's with that retailer in particular, they usually, depending on your PIN code, you will be able to buy stuff on cash on delivery. So it's not like Amazon, where base or Flipkart, where most of the country they'll have a cash on delivery option. So therein lies the difference. And if you don't have the right PIN code, it's not going to work. And Mike just checked it right now while recording this.
And I checked it with 3 PIN codes and it says COD not available, basically. Now, the thing with Games the Shop is they have cash on delivery for many PIN codes for most items. But if it's a limited item, a special edition or something where they have limited quantities, they usually don't offer cash on delivery because then they end up with unused stock if people cancel. So as of now, PSN codes, it doesn't look like it has cash on delivery. Things might change in the future, but as of now, it doesn't look like it is. I just tried 3 random PIN codes for Mumbai and it said no cash on delivery.
So yeah. Now, what's interesting with all this is now people have a choice, right? Do you want to pick up a physical copy of the game or do you want to pick up codes? Now, it's actually both are on even footing. Now, it'll be interesting to see what people choose. Hint, choose the physical games, guys. You're better than this. So, that's why this is important. It's going to be fun to see
how this
pans
out. And also, in a lot of cases, like with Ubisoft games in the past, I've been like trying to wait for getting a US copy so I can buy the DLC. And because unlike Microsoft, Sony has this weird thing where your DLC only works with your game region. With Microsoft, one specific game works with DLC bought on any region, any account. So here now, like at least since my primary account is a US account, I can actually pick up PSN cards for buying DLC for games, which was not possible earlier. So yeah, definitely this is a very good thing, I'd see. And with more gold editions coming in for like games like Assassin's Creed, and basically Ubisoft does it for all their titles, and even Square Enix doing it now, yeah, it's like very good for PlayStation gamers in India now. Like there's just less barriers now to spending money, I'd say, on games you want.
Yeah, and speaking of games that are coming to PlayStation, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is one of them, where this time you assassinate people in Greece and Rishi is going to give me some really bad news.
And you throw a hat and... Oh no, that's another Odyssey. Okay.
Hat in time. Anyway, yeah, so the point is Assassin's Creed Odyssey, funnily enough, we played it on Debug Xbox One X's.
Yeah.
So sorry to break that.
A few days ago.
Yeah, so...
As of this recording.
So yeah, so Ubisoft had a preview event for the game. And it's the most... non-Assassin's Creed game ever, which is amusing because we just had Origins last
year.
Why?
Do you play as Gandhi or something?
No, it's even better. It's like you actually end up being in a situation where the game takes place before the start of the Assassin Order and probably even before the start of the Templar Order. And there's going to be a lot of glimpses of the first civilization, aka the alien tech and super advanced life forms that actually gave rise to the Assassin's universe. So it's kind of like it's an origin to origins of Assassin's Creed Origins in a way. It takes place 400 years before that. But what's really cool here is looks so colorful. It looks fantastically colorful.
Okay, so before we get into how it looks and all, the build we played was about 10 to 15 hours into the game. We played as a level 18 character. We were allowed to play for a little over an hour, could do story missions and try out some of the new mechanics which are returning, but enhanced for Odyssey. So, yeah.
Yep. So as Mike said, with that background in mind, the game looked super colorful. I mean, the color, everything really popped. And I think it just goes to show how varied the art direction is versus Origins. And I think that works in such a compelling fashion because you never... it's a running joke, right? Like the Assassin's Creed games are basically cookie cutter that you can't tell one from the next. But despite being available just a year after Origins, it's looking very good. The art direction is really smart and showing for that differentiation. Second thing, but that's not to say it's a 100% fresh game. There are some parts that look similar. Like, for example, the boat models in this game, which you use to go from one small island to another, that they look the same. But that aside, they do a really good job of playing to the conceit that this is a fresh game. What I did was I decided to go full on with the story missions. I ended up playing as a female character. I think Cassandra is a female
Cassandra.
Character. Yeah. And I ended up on this island. I'm supposed to help rebels beat the dominating power. It was pretty cool. But what I found really fascinating was the conversation options. So yeah, this may be Assassin's Creed, but it's actually Mass Effect. So yeah,
but it's good.
It's too early to tell.
Now,
but
tell me the important things, right? I mean, the conversation options will affect the story.
Yes, the conversation.
And is it like that Paragon Renegade
system?
No,
so here's the thing. You don't have it. There doesn't seem to be any Paragon Renegade system up front, which is really cool. But when you do talk to NPCs, their reactions are worth it. So the payoff is a lot more immediate. So I was trying to like mess around with the conversation options, playing as Cassandra, talking to another female character, and doing weird stuff like, you know, trying to say both of us are stone cold killers and we should hang out more often and stuff like that. And it's really cool to see their reactions, which were basically a mixture of eye rolls plus, oh my God, how could you say that? So and you do have multiple choices for an entire conversation, which make it really cool. I don't know if this is going to impact your choices in a way like The Witcher 3. It doesn't seem to be that way. But just from a pure reflex, from the pure reactions you get, it's worth messing around with, which I think is pretty cool in an Assassin's Creed game. Second thing is the combat system seems to be revamped, which is, again, a pretty drastic step considering Origins was so good. You can essentially, from your skill tree, you can customize what skills you want. And have them enabled at any given time. So, and you can even enable specific perks and abilities. So there's one ability which lets you do a Spartan kick. So yeah, background, this game takes place in Greece 400 years before Assassin's Creed Origins. And yeah, so you are of Spartan blood and you can perform a Spartan kick.
You don't yell and say, this is Sparta, sadly, unfortunately.
So. But it is probably the most overpowered move in the game, because when you kick someone off a cliff, even if they're a boss, the bosses will probably take, 50% of their damage at least. But the bigger enemies will pretty much die. So it's pretty cool. I was just basically going around the map kicking people and seeing what would happen. And it's quite cool. So that aside, the story seemed to be nice. It seems to follow the usual conceit that, you know, you have to liberate the land from tyranny. But what worked here was the fact that it was a mixture of stealth and combat missions. And stealth does play a role, even though they want to downplay it this time around. It still plays a role, and it works pretty well. Even the loot system seems to have gotten a bit of a slight overhaul, in the sense that you can modify how your weapons work and stuff like that. Some of them, at least. Some animations in combat seem to have a longer wind-up time. So, for example, if you're using a really heavy mace and you're trying to beat the crap out of someone, you'll need to factor in that the hit that person with that mace will take roughly 3 animations or 4 animations. Which means you can't just tap and see an immediate response on screen. You have to be premeditated. So it really digs into this. Origins had some of this, but here it seems to be a lot more polished and evident that this is the amount of time you need. This is how you need to be deliberate with your attacks. So I thought that was really nice. And after messing around with the clubs, I decided to go with the swords. Swords also came in 2-3 varieties, and you could use them to get quick hits in, parry, and it worked really well too. Arrows, the switching to arrows on the fly was really cool. You could actually dodge an enemy attack last minute. The entire thing would go into slow-mo. You could switch to arrows and, you know, headshot. So it allows for a lot of flexibility, and it builds upon Origins in ways that to me seem super meaningful. So yeah, it seems interesting. I mean, yeah, there were, you know, the usual set of issues you'd expect with a preview build. There were a few bugs here and there.
But then the build we were playing was also not the latest build.
Exactly.
The latest build was available at Gamescom, but the build we played was the E3 build, which was from June. So it likely would have been complete for E3 in May or earlier. So
yes.
Yeah, it's been a while since that, and it's going to release in like middle of October or at least early October.
October 5.
Yeah, October 5 with multiple editions, but we'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, combat really, really good. Using the club feels like you're using a club with proper weight and all that. And some of the, at least like I didn't really bother much with the story mission, because I wanted to try out the large scale battles and the naval battles, which were also available in the demo. But yeah, combat was really, really good. Although I ran out of arrows pretty quickly and had to go and look for wood to craft arrows. But yeah, like, what are those random mercenaries? One of them something the monster or something like that.
Oh yeah, this is the same thing in Origins. So there's a kind of a law system in place where what I started with my playthrough was I decided to just go around and kill innocent civilians. Don't try this at home, kids. And when you do that often enough, you have a lot of you have mercenaries who show up, who will essentially hunt you down because there's a bounty on your head. And they have some weird names like, I don't know, Olimar the businessman or Leonidas the blah, blah, blah. So it's quite funny to see the names and what they try doing. I think I ran into 4 or 5 of them in my playthrough. That's because I was, you know, killing people who I wasn't supposed to kill. But it was, it's interesting because they even jump into your story mission. So if you're in a story mission and you're supposed to raid a base, but you know you've been on the wrong side of the law, they can just show up in the middle. It reminded me a bit of Shadow of War and Shadow of Mordor's Nemesis system. But again, it'll be fun to see how deep it plays into that conceit when the game's out.
All right then.
So yeah, before that, the naval battle, which I tried, I didn't really, because I just wanted to try the battle, I skipped all the story stuff before that, but getting into a ship and then after that controlling a ship with sort of like tank controls, then you get to like use the shoulder buttons as you used to attack and aim your arrows and you command people on your ship to like take out, you have to take out three ships with blue sails, at least in the mission. I forgot which, whatever story segment, but yeah, really, really fun. Looks gorgeous. Like, obviously played it on the Xbox One X, which is likely going to be the best looking and performing console version of the game. But yeah, it was really, really good. The large scale battle, on the other hand, it just felt like, you know, one of those movie trailers where they do a cut in and everyone's just fighting haywire and all that. And using the club, which is like very slow and powerful, but very slow, did not end up well. Died in like 10 minutes over there. But yeah, looking forward to Odyssey. Was already going to probably pick it up around launch, but yeah, definitely looking forward to it after playing it. So yeah.
Yeah, Mike. So I was going to ask you to maybe, you know, talk us through the release date and the editions that people can pick up if they want.
Yeah, so like I mentioned with the Gold Edition, Ubisoft does a ton of editions for their games always. And while all of them don't show up in India, there are 4 editions or 3 with an asterisk showing up over here. The standard edition, which is 3999, releasing on October 5th, is actually getting a free upgrade to the Omega edition, which is what Ubisoft is calling the deluxe edition this year, which usually has about $10 to $15 worth of DLC cosmetics. And it also has a art book and a poster map this time. So basically, instead of the standard edition, you get that. You can still pre-order it. And if the box art on wherever you pre-order it says pre-order and get free upgrade to Omega edition, you should be good. In addition to that, there's the Gold Edition, which is basically not the Omega Edition, but the Standard Edition with the Season Pass included. No other extras. So no map, no art book or anything. And Ubisoft usually is good to India with Collector's Editions, and the Medusa Edition is the Collector's Edition this year. 8999, not 10,000. And releasing the same day, 5th October. And it has a big statue, the game, it has the art book, it has the map, and it has the game soundtrack on CD in addition to some DLC content, which is like an XP boost and like nonsense like that you can get in the game anyway or you don't need. But yeah, the collector's edition is 9,000. The gold edition is, just loading, 7,000. Okay, usually these things are 6,000, but for this it's 7,000. And standard edition is 3999. And if you were lucky enough to order it with that Freedom offer which was available, it was 3499. But yeah, just if you're getting Assassin's Creed on PS4 or Xbox One this year, make sure your the box art on whichever retailer you're ordering from says pre-order to get the Omega Edition free, so you get the nice art book and map free. So
yeah, are going to pre-order, then do it right away because, you know, the rupee is constantly falling and prices could change.
Actually, that's a very valid argument, given that we're close to, I think, what, 72 rupees to the dollar? That's a very valid argument. At the recording of this podcast, I think we're close to that. But as far as I'm aware, this shouldn't have too much of an impact because India, for most of its games, India deals with the European offices of the publishers. So we usually deal in terms of Euro or GBP. And that's why we haven't been impacted as much as we could have, at least with Sony, at least with Ubisoft, to an extent, even 2K. And even the other publishers, we're not impacted that much. But it's something to keep in mind because if we do see, if we do see a fallback on currency, on other currencies versus the rupee, it could have a fallback. But for now, things seem to be stable.
Okay then. So I think it's time to maybe talk about The Division 2. Now, the last time we saw this, big news about this was during the E3 trailer announcements, when they showed a bunch of slightly gameplay footage, some cinematics around The Division 2. What we do know is that it's going to be taking whatever we saw in The Division to the next level. And there are going to be, it's the same thing essentially, like, okay, zombies sort of things have taken over the world. And, there's some kind of a disease which makes all of that a big problem, and you are probably in one of the few cities in the world that is contained, and over there also like people start going crazy.
Seems to be that way, but I don't know if we're gonna have, you know, the same kind of zombie apocalypse, zombie plague kind of situation, or the plague situation rather, that was the case with Division 1. Reason being, the way the game's lore set up this time around takes place in Washington, and what happens over here is it's people dealing with the after effects of the virus. So the first game, the virus was in full swing. People had masks. It took place in New York over the winter. Black Friday, around Black Friday, it was a complete nightmare. And it played heavily into the fact that there's snow all over the place. That was a major part of the gameplay. This time around, it seems to be taking place like in, 6 to 8 months after the New York incident. I think to me the bigger enemy is much like the last game. Would end up being the NPCs over NPC soldiers over any form of virus or the effects of that virus. And it is pretty interesting. We managed to play an early build, which is surprising because the game hasn't been made available for public playthrough. So I think India is one of the first countries in the world to do that.
And also, this is like really early because it's releasing in towards the end of March, I believe.
March
or somewhere
15. March 15.
Middle of March, and yeah, usually you don't get access to play games this early. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so however, it was only like a 15-minute demo, sadly. It's not like we got a lot of time with it.
And in fact, it actually like, you know, stopped us in the middle saying your demo will end in this many seconds, unlike usual demos, which sort of are 15-minute long missions, but you can play until you finish, you can explore. This was literally a timed demo, so yeah, we had to forcibly stop.
Yeah, so essentially it was like four of us were put into this setting where we had to go through this shopping complex, clear out a bunch of bad guys, go across into this seemingly deserted parking roads and parking area, clear a bunch of bad guys, get to their base and try clearing them out. But what is interesting was that even though there wasn't much variety in those 15 minutes, what is interesting was the classes, and here you're playing out as fully spec'd out characters with their specializations unlocked. So what happens in the Division 2 is when you hit level 30, you can choose a specialization. It could be a sharpshooter, which basically is a sniper expert. It could be a demolitions guy who basically, you know, deals with explosives, and so on and so forth. So there are four of us all set up with different specializations. And it was interesting. I mean, I ended up getting the playing as a sharpshooter class, which is fun because the sniper rifle actually had a sense of weight. And the shots actually, you actually felt that they were hitting your targets. And you also even felt when they didn't. The feedback seemed really good. You could even, secondary weapons were also nice too. The machine guns in my case. And you could just, you know, what's nice is that the game still retains the same iconography of the first game. So you can tell when you're laying down suppressing fire. You can tell when you're getting your shots right. You can tell when, you know, someone's when someone needs assistance. So in terms of telling you what to do, where to go, that feedback loop seems to be in place here. But I mean, obviously, since it's an early build, it was like, oh man, I mean, at least on my console, it was super laggy, and there were frame rate issues. Though it didn't seem to be the case on the other machines, at least Mike didn't have that problem.
Yeah, so I was looking at Rishi's console setup and all, and yeah, it was like a stuttery mess over there. And it used to happen randomly also, so it wasn't even like, you know, when you get into an open area after being in like a close corridor or something. It was just like really, really random. So mine didn't have much trouble with that. There was a bit of input lag though, but then, this is a very early build of the game, so I wouldn't expect anything at this point. And given how the Division 1 was like fixed and patched and still like it got Xbox One X enhancements recently and all, wouldn't worry about it that much. But yeah, gunplay was really nice, felt really good. But then again, the demo was a little out of context and like it didn't even explain a lot of things, at least at the time. So
yeah, it didn't. So like you were always struggling to figure out. So if you haven't been playing the OG Division for a while, you'd be struggling to figure out how to heal yourself. You'd be struggling to figure out how to use your gadgets, like your drones. You'd be struggling to figure out, I mean, in some cases there were people who were playing with us who couldn't figure out how to swap out weapons or heal the other players. So it had a bit of a curve, and visually it seemed a little rough, though again really colorful. I mean, compared to the first game, really colorful. And seemed competent, but I mean, still early days.
Yeah.
Indeed. So I think we are ready to talk about the most exciting thing.
No, before that, as of now, No. As of now, there is no collector's edition for the Division 2 coming to India. But then because it's so early, they might still list one later on. So yeah, as of now, it's just standard and gold edition for India.
Yeah, and honestly, considering how well the Division did, and there were fears around how well it could do because it was an online title, we won't be surprised to see all versions of the game make it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have been really interested in this game, but it's online, so you lost me right there, Ubisoft. Okay, bye. Anyway, so the games we've been playing this week, I think the past two or three weekends, I have not been at home, been traveling. So the only thing I could do was play games on my iPhone and iPad. And I chose to play Imbroglio, which is, you know, spelled Imbroglio for anyone who's looking on the App Store. It's a roguelike where, you know, the funny thing is that it's a grid where, like, there are, four tiles, 4x4, so 16 tiles grid. And in that, the weapon is actually on the grid. It's not in your hand. So if you move from one tile to the next, your weapon changes drastically. And, the whole idea is that there are four corners where monsters start coming in from. And they come in completely random orders, like with any roguelike. And you have to sort of defeat all of them and keep collecting gems in the meantime. So I think the game has an ending at, if you collect 256 gems, and this time, thanks to one feature in the game where you can copy the boards of, like, those who got a high score, I managed to reach, like, 207. And now, because I copied someone else's board, I also understand board building much better in this game. So I'm going to be trying to make one or two boards of my own and see how that plays out. And eventually going to be trying to, like, finish the story by, you know, reaching that 256 a gem score. So the other interesting thing about this game is that every character in this game, which I think it has about 9 or 10 characters, so every character has like a completely different playthrough. So if you finish it as, for example, Count Harry, who I think his name is Count Harry, I'm not sure, but anyway, so he, like, that character doesn't have any ranged weapons. But if you try it as Bob, now Bob, like, the rule is that you can't have two weapons of the same type, like, no repeat weapons. So you have to, like, stock up the board with completely different weapons, and that gives you a totally different playthrough. So far, I've been much better with Bob than I was with Harry, even though with Harry, I could, like, just stock up on my favorite weapons. So yeah, let's see how that goes. If you haven't heard of this game, I'm not surprised. It's not a very popular game, but it is definitely one of the best I've played on iOS.
And premium, so. No in-app purchases.
Yeah, no in-app purchases. So there's actually one, once you buy the game, there's one expansion.
Well, no microtransactions, expansions.
Yeah. So if you want more weapons and, like, a couple more characters, then yeah, that is there. And the only thing I haven't unlocked in the game so far is one character, which requires, like, you to score 128 with at least four characters. So now I've scored 128 with two, and I'll be trying other characters soon and trying to get a high score with them as well. So yeah, what about you guys? Rishi, I know you've been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey and The Division 2, but what else?
So
Spider-Man.
This is just like, I mean, I don't know what to say. This is September. This year, September feels like November in the sense there's too much to play. But I mean, I should have been playing Destiny 2 Forsaken and PUBG 1.0 and the Battlefield 5 beta. Hmm. Yeah, I'm sitting on those that I haven't started yet. And I mean, codes have showed up for other titles like, you know, Valkyria Chronicles 4 and then Wasteland on Switch. So there's a lot that's going to be played very soon. Welcome to Team No Sleep. But what I've been playing is Spider-Man on PS4. Our review is up on this site you may have heard of called gadgets360.com. We even have an opinion piece on why the open world is so good. And we had a killer podcast with Mike's replacement last week, which is pretty cool too. So you should check that out. But
I wouldn't call it a killer podcast. I'd call it a conscientious podcast.
That too.
Yeah.
So
in joke that no one's going to get.
Yeah, so anyway, that aside, Spider-Man, because the traversal is still good and I want 100% it. It makes me want to play it to the absolute completion. It's so much fun. Yeah, Spider-Man.
Okay, I've been playing quite a few things outside of Spider-Man, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and that small session of The Division 2. Played and completed Donut County on iPad. It's from Annapurna Interactive and Ben Esposito, not Despacito. And it's basically a game where you control a hole as a raccoon and you're supposed to get donuts inside it, and then the hole keeps increasing in size, sucking things into it. It's like a puzzle, sort of a puzzle relaxing game with very good music. I finished it in like 3.5 hours and all. It's on PC, PS4 and iOS only. It probably will show up on Switch maybe eventually. I don't know about Android though, because they don't really put their stuff on Android outside of Florence. Very good. It's like $5 on iOS and $15 on PC and
$3.99 rupees for the Indians among you.
Okay.
And yeah, keep in mind, Annapurna Interactive may have an Indian name, but it's not an Indian company.
Yeah, and it's definitely not that company which makes atta.
Yeah, or salt.
You could use those for making donuts though. But yeah, but yeah, so played that. Other than that, been playing Freedom Planet on the Switch, which is a game which came out 4 or 5 years ago on PC. It was a game which started out as a Sonic fan game, but it's actually, I'd say if you like Sonic Mania, you'd really, really like this game. They've nailed the movement, good combat, very good music, stuff like that. Other than that, also been playing, well, I'll be playing Valkyria Chronicles 4 soon on Switch, but yeah, basically just that.
Cool. So, you know what? Now that you mentioned Annapurna Interactive, I went and checked out the games that they make, the games that they have already on the App Store.
It's a very Pranay developer. All that hipster stuff and good artwork.
And they also published Sony's Flower, which was a PS3, PS4 and Vita exclusive. They got an iOS port done of that.
One day we'll get Journey on the App Store. Mark
my words.
It's called Sky.
Which is looking like more vaporware than FF7 remake at this point, but yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so Flower is on the App Store. Then there is a game called Goro Goa, which is really good, ridiculously inventive puzzles. Something that, you know, if you thought that you were tired of puzzle games, you should really check this one out. It'll blow your mind. And then they also have a game called Florence, which is not exactly a game. It's more of a interactive storybook type of an experience, but again, that's also totally worth it. We've done a list of like the 30 best iPhone and iPad games that
it's
you
only
can 30. Play. Yeah, I mean,
we need to fix that.
Yeah, we had like some 100 games on that list, and we finally narrowed it down to 30. And like, you know, all of us have like black eyes from the blows we rained on each other because, you know, our favorite game sometimes couldn't make the cut. But yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and you should totally check that out if you're into iOS gaming. I think that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. And if you like this show, please do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts on your iPhone and the Google Podcasts app on your Android phone. Thank you so much for listening.